The whole point of this is to have an open discussion about what advisors really want. What are the things that would really help you? We've got quite a lot of platforms on, particularly traditional platforms, are participating to listen to what the advisors have got to say. It is your opportunity to share what you really like, what you don't like, what you think could be improved. I would ask everybody, if you are not actually speaking, could you mute yourself? It does get very difficult. If people are in open plan offices and they've got microphones open, it can get very difficult if you get background chatter. But then when you do come on, please be ready to unmute yourself. I will try and give people notice in advance if I'm coming to them. As I did say a few minutes ago, when there were a few people on the call, do please use the chat function, share your views on what people are saying, share your wider views, agree, disagree. If you'd like to specifically talk on a subject, and I would encourage everybody to do that, please use the raise your hand function. So other than that, this session is being recorded. We will put a full transcript online on the advisorsoftware.com site about a week to 10 days from now. If, however, you say something and you think afterwards, maybe I went a little bit far then, and you would like us to redact it from the transcript, drop a note to me or to Jesse, and we'll make sure it's edited out of what goes online. To reiterate the point on third-party recording tools and transcription tools, in inviting you to join this session, we got everyone's consent for you to be recorded. If anybody uses a third-party tool, you won't have got consent from all the other people, so please don't use those tools. If people persist in doing them, very reluctantly, we occasionally have to remove people from meetings. I think we've done these announcements enough now that we're not having as many problems. Possibly shouldn't have tempted fate on that one. And as I say, the full transcription will go up on advisorsoftware.com, together with some very creative highlights for you to watch. So, into the session today, I'm going to begin. Hopefully many of you were at our Empowering Advice Through Technology conference, January. We did, for those of you that don't know it, great event, really brings out a lot of the latest in industry tech. We asked the audience what percentage of them were looking for new platform partners, and the answer was 47%. We then asked what percentage of them were looking for platform partners among the emerging advice tech platforms. And as you can see on screen now, it was just a tiny couple of less than a percentage point from 95% of advisors said they were looking for things different. I think that's the purpose of today. Let's have a conversation about what people are looking for in platforms and what they really need. As I say, you've got a lot of platforms listening to you today, so it's the full opportunity to share your views on what you like, what you don't like, what good looks like. We have got three. Okay, I'm seeing some interesting comments coming in about who's not possible on things. I'm going to be coming back to the people making those comments a little bit later on. We do have three panelists who've agreed to help kick the discussion off, talk about the platforms they've selected, and the real thing is why they've selected them. I'm going to invite them each to introduce themselves, and maybe first, if I could come to Sinead Meehan. Can you begin, Sinead, by introducing yourself and then take us through your current thoughts on platforms and preferences? Yeah. Welcome.
Hello, I'm Sinead Meehan. I'm a Wealth Planning Director of the Northern Ireland Office of Benchmark Financial Planning, and we're currently using mainly the Fusion platform, which feeds from the Enable back office system. I've been advising just over 10 years, but previous to that, I've been a long-term paraplanner for 15 years, so I've used a lot of platforms, putting assets on them, taking assets off them, and gathering all the information. We've selected the Fusion platform. Obviously, we use the Enable back office system, and there's direct integration straight through onto the Fusion platform. They have the right type of wrappers for our clients' investment strategies. And one of the main things that we like about Fusion is there's no direct portal that clients log on to with the lack of the other platforms. So the client sees everything through our own wealth platform back office system, their transaction histories feed. So everything's there for the client and they don't have to go to another platform. I always personally find that very confusing for clients because they had two or three logons, have logged on to Parmainer, have logged on to Transact, and should I log on to you? It lessened the reliance for them to log on to our platform where we held the overall view of their wealth. And that's really it. It's about reducing, for us, it was about reducing the complexity for clients because I find clients find it very confusing between their products, their investment strategy, Fusion, all those different names. And having more logons than possible, I found was confusing for clients. So it's trying to strip everything back from simplicity and it's straight through processing. You only put the information in once. So that's really why we selected the route we went down to pair with Enable and the Fusion platform after using a number of platforms over a long period of time. That would be our main platform of choice at the moment.
Great, thank you. That's a very clear message to kick us off, the sort of use data once, move away from the necessity of what generally gets called swivel chairing, having it to enter data in your own systems and then put it into platforms as well. Can I come now to Anthony Carty, please? Anthony, would you like to talk to us about Clifton and the decisions that you've taken?
Sure, thanks, Ian. Afternoon, everyone. Yeah, so I suppose our sort of journey in this sense started back in 2014, where for largely similar reasons that Sinead just outlined, we didn't really fancy the idea, if you like, of clients having to disappear off into other environments other than, if you like, the Clifton environment. So our first thought really was around client portal, actually, as opposed to platform. I think we were Money Info's first UK client. And what we really wanted then was within that portal environment and client reporting environment was to have straight through processing and data feeds and APIs with our chosen platform partner. And so actually back in the day, that was Novia. And that worked really well. We were a smaller firm then, didn't really have the size or operational capability to, if you like, have our own platform. But then in 2019, we got our own platform permissions and Morgan Lloyd Invest being the name of that platform. And then under the bonnet was SS&C Hubwise, which I'll come back to in a moment. But to zoom out for a minute, it's just a few things that are quite important to understand. One is we've got our own in-house tech capability, which is, I guess, quite unusual. And again, similar to Fusion, we've got our own back office technology, Connects. It's built on top of Microsoft Dynamics. So obviously it's pretty helpful having that resource in-house. And secondly, as some of you may know, we're also, or within the group, we have our own pension provider business, which is of a reasonable size. And if you like, that gives you a certain sort of operational slash administrative expertise that you can draw on, which might not, to be fair, ordinarily be the case within a traditional financial planning firm, which we can come back to. The reason we chose SS&C Hubwise in 2019, there were really three reasons. We went through quite a lot of due diligence, talked to a lot of potential partners. One key reason was for us, was that we wanted to work with a partner whereby the technology was their own. It wasn't effectively rented. We had some concerns, and I'm not really knocking it, but it's just that's the way we felt about it. We didn't really want to partner with a firm whereby underneath the bonnet it was GBST or FNZ or Bravura, and then down the line that changes, which in turn causes friction or aggravation as far as our perspective is concerned. Second thing is we wanted to partner with a firm that could deal with fractional trading. That was thinking ahead a bit around ETFs and being able to run bespoke portfolios, direct equities and so forth. That wasn't a requirement we had there and then, but it was something that we knew would be on our roadmap. And the third thing, I suppose, candidly, actually, was we wanted to be, at that point in time, bigger fish in a smaller pond, and therefore be able to properly be able to draw on the resources of that platform partner and not be lost in the noise of that platform having lots of external relationships. And that's just worked well for us. And so they were the three key reasons, but I'm sure we can circle back to some of the other stuff we do.
Thank you, Anthony. That's brilliant. Now, I'm going to come to Daniel Manette, if I may, because Daniel, you're approaching this from a slightly different perspective, aren't you, within your organisation? So could I invite you to talk about why you've selected to work with P1 and about your position?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm coming to this from a slightly different way in that we're a discretionary investment manager. We've only very recently set up September last year. And so I'm coming from it from a slightly different view in that a lot of the platforms, so to speak, that I've worked with the last 15, 20 years have been more the sort of DFM style platforms. So the retail side has been a learning experience for me, but I can tell you, if anyone's probably on the call has used them, if you think some of them are bad in the retail space, you should see some of the stuff that's in the DFM space. There's a whole lot of functionality that no one ever uses, and there's a lot of patches and updates and everything else. So when we wanted to launch, the thought process was trying to keep costs down, because that was a trend that was happening, and part of that is around efficiency. So I was looking at lots of different types of platforms that would be our core platform, and then I was introduced to P1. When we were originally going to launch with an app, and I'm going to now, various reasons that didn't happen, but I was quite impressed by how they opened up their APIs and they were willing to integrate with any other systems. And you think, if you're going to launch a business, your core platform, whatever that may be, has to be fit for purpose now, but it also has to be fit for purpose in 10 years' time. And having worked in an environment where you're always behind the curve, every update never quite made it to the line, and you're always playing catch up, really, that actually over time you spend less time doing the things you should be doing, which is research, running money, making good investment decisions, and much more time in admin and problems. And I'm sure anyone has, of course, used the DFM before, tax packs, historically that time of year where we spent so much time dealing with problems and that sort of thing. So that was really my thoughts about having the right technology partner, and been fairly impressed so far with what I've seen from P1 in terms of what they can do. And they've launched some functionality for the discretionary managers to be able to rebalance and manage their portfolios outside of the platform environments. It's through a Microsoft tool, and obviously you can manage that, and then it integrates within there. So I think that's the key for me, is on from the tech side, is having the correct platform, and then being able to improve and adapt and evolve, which is not always been my experience in our industry and technology. But yeah, so I think in terms of opening up the discussions, when I'm looking at platforms, and obviously our portfolio is not just on P1, they're on other platforms, which I'm sure lots of people use. It's been quite an interesting experience for me, having to log on and manage the portfolios with the different platforms. It's, yeah, some are better than others, which I'm sure you'll know.
That's great. Thank you. I'm going to start going out to people that have put comments in the chat. And if I can encourage you all, please do share your views and any observations, particularly. Do you agree, disagree with the points that have been made by our panelists so far? And also, I'll come to people there are a few people that have been quite vocal, which is exactly what we want, by the way. I would encourage more people to say more. But Alex Fry, you've shared views on a number of different platforms, actually, good and bad. Would you like to talk us through your experiences, what you really love, a little bit of perhaps about what you loathe, and where people could do better? Sorry, Alex, I should have warned you sooner. And can I say that after Alex, I'm going to come to Mike Legasic, and then I'm going to come to Richard Goff. Let's go to Richard, and then hopefully Alex will unmute himself and can join us next. Richard, your thoughts.
Thanks, Ian. I mean, essentially platform choice historically. So by that, I'm talking maybe 10 years ago, in my 9 years in my current environment and previous, was actually driven by, we started not, don't start with the provider, we started with our portfolios. And our, so we built the portfolios for risk profiles, we had a range of funds, and the starting point was assessing which platforms could actually deal with the funds we wanted. And that historically ruled out quite a, it was a disturbing number got removed. Also, profitability was important to us. So making sure that the provider was actually not burning, because it's really expensive to build a platform and then get assets under management. And there's a massive capital burn, and then American Express, for those who remember that debacle, fortunately was involved in that. The conversations I find very interesting, the ones I have with my bosses, who are the advisors, who frequently tell me how rubbish various platforms are. And then when I point out to them, but you do realize you haven't actually logged into them or used them for 5 years, so how would you know? And I'm telling you, actually, they're really good. Yes, Transact, because we find generally it works for us. The thing that puts me off, and this is a massive thing, functionality, I've never in 20 years of using platforms for clients had a client tell me or ask me for some functionality on their platform. You've got to remember, it's their money, not ours. So we need to be efficient, but functionality is not the be all and end all. So it's about efficiency, really, is where we're after.
That's a really good point to make there. Yeah, I'd like to, and perhaps that's an interesting one to talk about in terms of trade-off as well. I did say I'd come to Alex Fry, so I will do. Then Anthony, I can see you've got your hand up, and then I'm going to come to Mike Legasnik. Alex, if you're ready. You shared a few views in the chat. I'd love you to expand a bit more if you can.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry, I missed that. Someone was asking me a question in the office. And then I heard Alex being mentioned, and I was like, could be me. Yes, I guess we use a mix of what is now quite a traditional platform in Transact, not necessarily because the technology is great or the process is brilliant. We do have our gripes with it. Again, as I think was it Richard was saying, that if you haven't been actually on and using the system, you shouldn't really moan about how it works. But obviously I get the feedback from the team. And yeah, it does work, but it isn't perhaps as slick and efficient as it could be. But because it offers all the wrappers that you could possibly want, you know, and the service is generally pretty decent. Yeah. You know, we think it's an important thing to have as part of our panel. And then our other main platform that we use is P1, which is quite different, very new, very technology driven. Again, I'm not sure who it was, but someone was mentioning about P1 and the integration and the open API they have. We haven't linked up to that yet, but yeah, I remember reading an article perhaps a year ago about someone saying that they, you know, that they got an integration into their CRM set up in half a day or something because they had this open API, and you don't have to wait for P1 to connect to whatever you're using. You just, you've got the resources, you can go and find someone just to get that set up. So it's a really good solution, low cost. I know there's other solutions people talk about, like Fundment and things like that, but this is one that we've been exposed to and we've been using, and we've had a really good experience. We know we have very few issues. The costs are low, the open architecture. So, you know, any fund that they can, you know, technically add, we can have. It's just a matter of requesting it. So, yeah, it just seems to work really well. But even Transact have been talking about opening up data feeds and things like that. I think they can see the trend, and they don't want to be completely left behind. So I think it's going to end up with quite a good solution for us as a firm.
Great. Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you very much for that, Richard. Anthony, can I come to you? You were going to comment on something from a few minutes ago, I think. Then I'm going to come to Mike Legasnik.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was just picking up something. I agreed most of what Richard said, it was just the statement around in 20 years, clients not asking for a specific piece of functionality, of course, not really sure what Richard's definition of client is, but just to pick up on that, when we think about clients, we think we've got three. One is the end retail client, the other is the advisor, and the final one is the administrator slash paraplanner. And so in terms of functionality, of course, the end retail client largely, and I'm sorry to say this, largely is pretty clueless. And so it's about providing, hopefully, a really smooth, slick customer journey and them having access to relevant information at the right time, in the right place, and in the right format. I suppose the functionality piece, as far as we think about it, is that friction bit. It's the integration. We just view the platform as one necessary and important part of quite a big jigsaw. And, you know, as far as we're concerned, there's lots of bits and pieces that go into that jigsaw, be it cash flow modeling or the fact finding or the LOA process or money laundering or risk profiling, whatever the case may be. In our world, it's having an integrated suite of tools where you enter one piece of information once and it populates everything else. So I take the point around platform functionality, and it's a point well made, but I think you're, with a conversation like this, you're in danger of getting siloed into just talking about platforms, when of course there's a much bigger picture around the integration of the other bits of kit that are nowadays necessary.
Yeah, I think I detect a little bit of a trend coming out here that's almost a balance between complete open architecture, and I'm saying this not just based on what's being said by people on the discussion, but also seeing the remarks, some of the remarks in the chat. There's a playoff between complete open architecture and functionality, ease of use, streamlined operation. I suppose a point that I'd like to invite people to consider is, would you differentially price between the two? You know, if you've got an organization that offers you a very broad range of assets, but is more difficult to work for, would you reflect that in your pricing to the customer? Because it's a real cost to you, and can you realistically justify, if you're needing to give people certain platform propositions in order to give them the breadth of investment that they want, but that creates additional cost to you, should that be carried on to their advice charges? I know Mike Legasic's been waiting a long time, so Mike, I'm going to get you to speak, and then I'm going to come to Daniel, and then if I may, I'm going to come to Emma Warren, just to give you a heads up, if that's all right, Emma. Mike Legasic, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Ian. Thanks for putting these events together. They're really useful, and I look forward to speaking to you a bit later today. We've been using Fundment quite a bit lately, relatively new, but quite impressed with what we see. I do the functionality. I think open architecture is important to integrate, based on the AI conversation we had last week. I think too many platforms have stood still in this day and age. If you're standing still, you're actually going backwards, perhaps maybe rested on their laurels a little bit. I don't know. I think they've got it all sorted. But AI is going to change all that. I can see that definitely. The Fundment, they've got very liberal family pricing discounts. So they're not rigid on it. They're quite liberal on it. So we've managed to secure family significant discounts by having family members keyed in as the same level of collective wealth. And I do the simplicity when clients log in, they can easily see pounds and pence and in percentages, whether they're up or down. So I know everyone's got different clients and everyone requests different levels of access. But we do get quite a few. And I try to put myself, if I was a client, even if I had limited amount of financial knowledge, I'd quite like to go in very easily and simplistically, periodically, and just have a very plain, simple snapshot of whether I'm up or whether I'm down. There's so many platforms, it's like uncovering a bloody layers of an onion to try and get to where is my money and how is it performing. So I like how it's a simplistic way of doing it. We've used many platforms in the past. We used to use Aegon, but in our experience, they're a bloody nightmare. We move away from them. They fall into the category of standing still. So I'm quite excited, and like yourself, Ian, we're integrating and really trying to get every last cent out of smart use of AI, not just for the client journey and planning, but things like platforms and all aspects of the business and the pain spots that all I face these days. I'm truly excited that AI, even where it's come in the last short 12 months, God only knows what it's going to do in the next 12 or 24 and thereafter, but it's going to be an absolute game changer. And I think any IFA practice personally that doesn't try to embrace or get someone who can do it for them, I really fear for them that they're going to perhaps be left behind. And I did read something interesting. It's just a slight off topic, but I think it's worth mentioning. There's one AI company I'm looking at trialing at the moment called Saturn AI, and I'd recommend guys check those out. Where at the moment we're hitting a critical mass because of the consumer duty and the requirements and the compliance responsibilities of running a practice these days, that's taking away client interaction. Clients don't see the value of what we have to do on the other side of the business, but they believe that the kit they're putting together now will turn the tide, where perhaps where practices are hitting a critical mass where they say, we just can't take on any more people because we'll drop the ball and spread ourselves too thin. They believe the systems are going to get in place will turn that 180, where you will be able to legitimately and compliantly look after perhaps significantly more clients without dropping the ball.
Yeah, so okay, Mike, I get that.